Friday, 21st of May, Ches Sivan Isruchag, Rabbi David Kaplan, Kohanim Complications.
Good morning. In the Parsha, right after the Torah starts, it talks about the Sota, and after the Sota, it goes into the section of the Nazir. And then, following the Sota and the Nazir, you have Vaydavra Shamamosha Lemar, Dabra Alarm Valbon of Lemar, Kos of Orchos Bene Sola Morlah. Then it comes with the Birkas Kohanim, Berech Hashem Yishmecha, etc. The Torah comes. I always wonder, always meaning last 24 hours, I wondered why is it that the Torah follows? Why all of a sudden out of the clear blue, Birkas Kohanim? Out of the clear blue, it seems like, what's it doing over here? Out of the clear blue, all of a sudden the Torah throws in, Hashem says to Aaron, give the bracha to Kalai Yisrael. Why is the Torah located over here? So I'm thinking that the pshat is, perhaps, you just came off of one very unpleasant and one semi-unpleasant involvements of a kohen. The very unpleasant one is obviously a woman, the sota, the entire affair is unpleasant. And then, if she dies, it's extremely unpleasant. The Nazir is then somebody who has to go through a period of deprivation where he is going to deny himself various pleasures. And then again, at the end, the Kohen gets involved. The Kohen takes his korbanos from him. So the whole thing, the association, there could be perhaps a negative association with the Kohanim that the Kohen is involved in testing a Sota and in a Nazir who made his oath of Nazirus because of the Sota. And you get this idea of the Kohen as being somebody, whenever something unpleasant is happening, enter the Kohen. So it could be after the Kohen, the Torah then follows it with Birkas Kohanim to remind Klai, so that's not the Kohen's role. The Kohen isn't just there for unpleasant occasions. The Kohen is there to give you a bracha, the coin is there to be your money. The coin is there to be a morah horoa for Klal Yisrael. Now, interestingly enough, I want to speak a little bit about. I don't know how many of you are kohanim. Anybody? How many people are kohanim here? It's usually one out of 10 or one out of 20. But there's a whole world out there that what kohanim. I happen to be a kohen, and there's a whole world that kohanim have to go through, which people are simply unaware. If you look at Parshas Emor says. So Rashi brings down the double lashon and says Emor ve'amarta. And Rashi says, why does it say Emor ve'amarta? Lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. That the adult kohanim are urged in concerning the minor kohanim, the ketanim, that you have to watch over them. Now the Mefarshim asks, why you don't find that by any other mitzvah in the Torah? You don't find a situation where it says lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. Doesn't say by macholos asuros lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. Doesn't say by gilui erva, by gilui arayas lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. But the kohanim, it warns lahazir gedolim ala ketanim. So the Mefarshim explain why here Dasha, the Torah urges the adults. You see, in general, if you have Jewish children, so Jewish children are playing with other Jewish children. They associate with other Jewish children. And they're all in the same boat together. So none of them are going to play any games involving Avodah Zarah. There's not going to be anything involving murder. There's not going to be anything involving the games they play. I once saw a kid in Israel walking on a Shabbos afternoon. The kid was holding a broken leg of a chair. I said, what are you doing? He said, we're playing. The holy leg of a chair. What are you playing? He said, police and protesters. that was the game. So I don't know exactly who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. You know, police and protesters. That he was only, I don't even know if he was a police or a protester. He was only a leg of a chair. So you can assume that the children are playing. They're all playing one game together. But imagine a Kohen child is playing with his chaverim. And his chaverim have no limitations. So they could be playing, for example, they could be playing cemetery hide and seek. You know, let's hide behind the kvaras, you know. Or they could be playing some game with dead rodents, and the little coin is not allowed to become tame, and therefore the environment, the people that he's associating with are not as conscientious of the Isurim that he is. And therefore the Torah says that the father Kohanim the adult Kohanim have to watch the children Kohanim. Now, halacha l'maisa, nowadays, I'll show you a very practical application in Israel, whenever they have a class trip. So where do you go in Israel when you go on a class? Where do you go? Where does anybody go in Israel? What do you do? You go from, you know, you go visiting the kvaras. You know, it's either Maasa Machpelah or Kever Rochel or Rabbi Akiva or Meir Balanes. You go around the country. So I heard about a family was in Israel once for a summer, and they went touring around Israel. So they went, you know, Marasa Machpelah, you know, they went to all the kvaros. Finally, by the end of summer, a 7-year-old girl says to her mother, "Mommy, isn't there anybody in this country alive?" everywhere we went to a kvar, there you go from one kever to another. So I have to call up in the classes. I have to call up and ask the rabbein to make sure that if they go into Sanhedrin or they go to Rav Meir Balanes, any of these places, that my sons who have been in the chadorim there, that they don't wake up, they don't take them in. That's the hazir, because there's a lack of awareness. Excuse me, there's a lack of awareness. People who are not kohanim are often not aware what it is that the kohanim have to. What is it that the kohanim have to go through? Therefore, it says lazir agdolim alakhanim. Thank you very much, alakhanim. Thank you very much. So the first and most obvious issur that kohanim are involved with is probably tumas meis, that everybody knows. The problems of tumas meis. So just recently, lo aleinu, I had to go to a levaya in Eretz Yisrael of a relative, and we went to Har Menuchos, and the whole family had to go, and there was an overhang of trees. So my brother called the Chevra Kadisha, to the people in charge of the cemetery, to call to make sure that the trees which are overhanging and forms an ohel, so that we're able to walk. There is a path, there is kohanim access, except if this tree is overhanging. So that's something that most people aren't even aware of. If you've ever been in Bar Ilan Street in Israel, if you ever walk down Bar Ilan Street, so right outside the Sanhedria cemetery, there's a wall. And there are signs, official signs, posted on the wall that says kohanim must not walk up against this wall, because there is an overhang of the trees coming over the wall. So it becomes something you become sensitized to, whereas the person who's not a kohen often is not aware. Now, another problem that you run into, first of all, the idea of tumas meis. Why is it that kohanim are not allowed to come into contact with it? Why is there a limitation of tumas meis, probably the most famous limitation? Why is it kohanim are not allowed to come into contact with dead bodies? So I saw the poshut idea is obviously kohanim have a certain level of kedusha, and when they have that level of kedusha, so obviously they have to stay as far away from tuma as possible. But I saw in the sefer Oznaim LaTorah, Rav Sorotskin brings down, there's an idea that in many religions, when does the religious man, when does the holy man have anything to do with the people in the religion? When a person's about to die, they call it the holy man, and he administers the last rites and promises them a chelik in paradise, and that's the involvement with the holy man. While they're alive, there is not much involvement with the holy man. The Torah wants us to know that a Torah Jew, the Kohanim, are there to teach people how to live. And a person has to know that when he dies, the Kohanim are not allowed to come into contact, meaning, symbolically, to teach us that they can't help that person out once he's gone. Once he's gone, he's on his own. The Kohanim are not going to have any involvement. They can't help him out, which is why, by the way, the Kohen Gadol is not even allowed to come into contact with the next of kin. Even his brother, sister, mother, father, Kohen Gadol is not allowed, even with his immediate family, to become Tamei, that the immediate family members should not think that their father or brother or son is the Kohen Gadol, and therefore they have some sort of protectia up there. Therefore, they have to realize that it cannot help them, and there is a limitation. So, in the halachot of tumas meis, what kohanim go through, for one thing, you have the problem of cemeteries in general. Now, in Tzfas, sorry, in Meron, they just had on Lag BaOmer, where the crowds go to the kever of Shimon Bar Yochai. So, I just saw that somebody wrote a sefer for Kohanim. There's a new say in English. Rabbi Yochanan Lambar wrote a sefer in English for Kohanim. He himself was not a Kohen, but he began this whole Kohanim research and a tremendous, very, very beneficial for the Kohanim. And one of the things he pointed out was that in Meron, people go up there, now you got crowds, throngs of people, and they're shoulder to shoulder. So if you've got the person at the head of the line, at the head of the crowd, is there in the kever, bent over the kever, he forms an ohel over the kever. And now, if they're shoulder to shoulder, that ohel extends all the way out to the end of the crowd. You get a kohen standing all the way back, a couple hundred feet away, and the kohen still becomes tameh because of the extent of the tuma coming all the way out. So, you know, if you're not aware of it, you go up there and you're doing a big mitzvah, and at the end of the day, a kohen could walk out there with tumas meis. One example. Another example of another problem is hospitals in Eretz Yisrael. The hospitals are particularly problematic because Tumas Ohel by a Jewish body is worse than Tumas Ohel by a non-Jewish. Ironically, in Chutz Laaretz, it's easier for a Kohen to go into the hospital than it is in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the hospitals are not reliable. There's only one hospital in Yerushalayim, Shaar Tzedek Hospital. It actually has a sign that they put up that entrance to Kohanim is forbidden. So if somebody is nifter in the hospital, until they remove the body, they actually put up a sign, entrance to Kohanim is forbidden. It becomes a problem when you have to make an outpatient. I've had to go there for outpatient. They have an eye clinic there. I've had to make outpatient appointments. It becomes a problem. So you have to look for the sign. The other hospitals are not reliable because the other hospitals have an attachment, a permanent attachment to the morgue in the hospital with no double doors that block off the tuma. So that becomes a very big problem. I've had a situation where my wife had to be in the hospital for giving birth or whatever it is, and I was not allowed into the hospital because of the problem of Kohanim. Now, at Shaar Tzedek, they do put up a sign. As a matter of fact, I was once at Hadassah, and I got to the Hadassah. Neither of the Hadassahs are reliable in Kerem or Har Tzofim. My wife was in the hospital, and I had to go over there. I wanted to get into the hospital to see her, so I was loitering by the entrance of the hospital because I didn't know if I could go in or not, so I was waiting for somebody from to come by. Maybe they'll go in and check what's going on in the hospital. I had never determined what the situation is, so I was standing here loitering by the entrance, and they have the security guard is sitting inside the hospital. He's sitting there on a chair, and the security guard looks at me and says, "Lichado ni mato sepa, what are you doing here?" So I said, "I'm loitering back and forth for about 15 minutes." So I said, "What are you doing here?" So I said, "Well, I'm a Kohen, and I don't know if I'm allowed to go into the hospital." He says, "We can't get any Kohen. I'm also going out there. Holy Kenes. Holy Kenes." So I declined his to rely on his psak, I remained outside. But that is a concern. So in Israel, that's a concern. Now, a bigger concern, or a further concern, and in some ways an almost entertaining concern, is the difficulty of Kohanim flying. Kohanim, before they fly, have a problem that they have to check with the airlines before, depending on what the percentage chance of there being a body on the plane. So, for example, leaving large cities in the United States, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Toronto, the chances of their being on a plane are better than 50%, and therefore a Kohen has an obligation to check with the airlines before he gets on the plane. If it's a carrier that carries the body. So they now have an El Al flight out of the United States. El Al out of Newark is guaranteed not to have bodies. They made an arrangement that there will be a body-free flight because so Kohanim could at least say, if I used to fly from the United States, I would fly a regular carrier to somewhere in Europe. I used to fly to Frankfurt because the likelihood of there being bodies on planes and El Al leaving Frankfurt are very, very slim. I'd fly out to Frankfurt and then get on the plane over there where I didn't have to check. London as well, there's no chiyuv to check because of the percentages. The number is it's a one when you combine both El Al and British Airways, it comes out to about 1 in 20 flights. So there's no chiyuv on a Kohen to check. If Kohen is allowed to check, the chiyuv begins, the absolute letter of the law chiyuv begins when it's over 50% chance. But if it's under 50%, then it really depends on how conscientious the obligation. It depends on the person's, how conscientious one wants to be. However, the problem is, I once called El Al leaving London. It actually happened to me in London. I called them about 6 hours before the flight because I wanted to find out as soon as possible, because if there was a body on the plane, I wanted to be able to make alternative plans. So I called the guy up at cargo to find out if there are bodies. He said, "No, there are not going to be any bodies on tonight's flight." I called him up, he said, "As of yet, there are no bodies." I called him up 3 hours before the flight, and then I called him an hour before the flight. That's when they know the flight is closed, there aren't going to be any bodies. So I remember I called him two or three times, and I called him an hour before the flight, and I said, "Sir, I'm sorry, I'd just like to know again, are there going to be any bodies on tonight's plane?" He said, "Yes, 200, all of them alive." he had about enough of my calling. So they have tried making and designing a coffin that has a posach tefach that stops the tumah from exiting, and they then close it in with an outside box. Now, this is a big debate among the poskim. I spoke with Rabbi David Feinstein about 20 years ago, and he said nothing doing. There are poskim who are matir. There are poskim who are matir, and there are people who rely on it. The psak that I got was that I'm not able to rely on that. One of the reasons I can't rely on that is the practical implementation. It's simply not done, carried out properly by the cargo when they transfer the body. Me'ikra Adin, there's a machlokas poskim, whether or not anyway, even in the best of circumstances, whether or not you can use rely on it, Me'ikra Adin, that is a machlokas poskim. Now, the other problem that we ran into, and this is a remarkable problem, they have Terminal 3. You know, they opened up a brand new airport terminal in Israel. Now, those of you who remember, if you've traveled to Israel in the last 20 years or so, you remember when you were in Israel and you go out to the airport, you go out to the airplane, they used to put you on a bus. And they take you on a bus out to the airplane. Now, they always told us the reason they take you on a bus to the airplane was because of security. In Israel, anything that doesn't function properly, any bureaucratic glitches, it's always security. They just say security. Everybody goes, oh, security. And everybody's macabre. Yeah, they security. Well, they take you to take you out to the bus. Now they built a brand new terminal, and now they have sleeves that reach out to the airplane, and all of a sudden there's no security problem. Now, all of a sudden, the reason that they didn't have it in the previous airport was the previous airport was simply not equipped to handle sleeves going out to the airport. So now they have the sleeves. So somebody hopped the problem. If a plane lands at the airport and the plane has a body on it and they run the sleeve out to the plane, you've just knocked out the entire airport. Kohanim can't be in the airport. The entire airport becomes tummy. The sleeve attaches up to the plane and it knocks out the entire airport. So, which is al pi halacha, there's no question that it's correct. If there's a body on the plane, you attach it up, then you've just knocked out the entire airport. So they asked Rav Eliashiv what to do, because they knew that they were building this airport with sleeves. They asked Rav Eliashiv, and Rav Eliashiv said that what they have to do is, not only that, they even suggested that in the sleeve itself, they leave a crack in this roof, in the ceiling of the sleeve, to leave a crack so the tuma escapes through the crack. Rav Eliashiv said it's a problem, because you could have somebody walking through and blocking the crack. And that about the moment he's blocking the crack, that's going to cause the tuma if there's tuma on the plane. So what Yerushalayim said to do was that the Chevra Kadisha has to be given the remote control, and they take the body off the plane, and then the Chevra Kadisha will push the remote control that attaches the sleeve up to the, in other words, the airline will run the sleeve up to the plane except for the last section, and that last section has to be in the hands of the Chevra Kadisha, and then they take the body off the plane. Then they attach the sleeve up to the plane, so there's no problem, because once the body is taken off the plane, obviously the tuma is no longer a concern. So they went, when the airport first opened up, when Terminal 3, they went down there, this person who wrote the Sefer went down there to check to see the first flight into the airport was from New York, I think, with a body on the plane. They went down to see, to check how it is, if it's implemented properly, and it was. They pushed the Chevra Kadisha took the body off, and at that point, Rav Eliashiv said that it's okay, and therefore that's not a concern. There are, however, other concerns. Somebody is now checking into the problem in the New York area, for example. There is a problem. Well, let me back up. There was another problem that many of you heard of that took place going back about 8 years ago. There was a pilot, a Baal Tshuva, who was a pilot, and he was at a shir. And in the shir, they were learning about the problem of somebody being in the airspace over a cemetery. So this guy said, well, you know, I'm a pilot, and, you know, El Al flies out over the cemetery all the time. And there was a problem that El Al was flying out when they took off from Tel Aviv. There was a cemetery in Cholon, and the planes were flying out over the cemetery, and they were hitting the cemetery airspace at about 800 meters. They hit the cemetery airspace, and they flew out over the cemetery. So during those few moments, a half a minute or so, that it takes a plane to fly over a cemetery, any kind of plane becomes tummy. Now, all poskim agree. All poskim agree is a problem. The only way out of it was that there was the 747s flying at night did not fly over the cemetery in Cologne, apparently because of the noise level, they did not fly over, but all the other planes did. Any flights during the day, what's that? Right. But anyhow, he was said to wake up the dead. No, it wasn't the dead they were concerned about. But they had all the other planes that were flying out over that were flying out during the day. I remember the guys, the Bochum from England. It was right before Pesach when the story broke. And there were a lot of Bochum from England and Mir wanted to get home. They had the biggest problem because there were no alternatives for them. All the Kohanim that were from the UK were not able to fly because there were no flights at night and they had to. I think some of them went, actually took boats to Cyprus, and then they flew from Cyprus to Eilat. All the alternatives. Now, I had a problem. So then what happened was like this: they had the somebody came up with an idea. Which was interesting because I had to get out of the country, and I booked myself on a 747 at night to go to the United States, but I was concerned because sometimes the airlines will switch a plane, and if they switch the plane to a smaller plane, a smaller plane will fly out over the cemetery. Now, the truth was, I had spoken to Rav Rabitz, who was a member of the Knesset, and what happened was they knew, they were aware of this. They contacted the transportation authority in Israel, and they said that it has nothing to do with us, it's a military decision, so they couldn't reroute the planes. So they contacted the military, and the military said it has nothing to do with us, it's a transportation authority. So nobody in Rabbi Roberts even showed me, he received the facts from the Ministry of Transportation that they had rerouted the planes. He showed me the facts, they rerouted the planes, but there were from eyewitnesses sitting on the planes, and they put people standing in the cemetery looking up, and they said that the planes were not rerouted. So it became a very big problem for the Kohanim. I had to get out of the country. And then somebody came up with an idea, somebody mentioned it, somebody came up with an idea that if you're inside of a kli on the airplane, the kli, as long as it's a sealed kli, protects you from tumah. What kind of kli can a kohen possibly get into? So there's a body bag. And somebody came up with the idea to get into a body bag, which not all the poskim agreed that a body bag is an actual kli, is actually a kli. There were poskim said it is. And if it could work, it works. So there was somebody, one of the Kohanim, that I had heard of, who actually got on the plane, closed himself into this body bag on takeoff, and passed the airport, and then they released it. That took care of the problem. So I had to get out of the country, and I faxed El Al. By the way, Continental employees in Israel, the Goyim working for Continental, were told that if anybody calls to find out if the planes fly over a cemetery, say no. They didn't know why. They were just told, oh, say no. I faxed El Al, and I got a fax back from the CEO of El Al. I asked for permission to put myself in a body bag on takeoff. And I got a fax that said, dear sir, on takeoff, you must be firmly seatbelted into your seat with no, what do you call it, no shtick, this and that, and they denied me permission. So I was very nervous about if they switched the plane. I decided what I would do, I would take the body bag with me anyway, just in case at the last minute, on the chance that this case last minute, I'll put myself in a body bag. So my wife said no, because she said, whatever Avera, this is right after 9/11, this is shortly after, and my wife said, whatever Avera you're worried about going over to cemetery, imagine what you're going to do getting into a body bag on takeoff on a plane. Imagine a guy sitting next to you frantically tying himself in on takeoff. Why don't you create a panic? And therefore, she put an end to it. So I didn't do that. Al-pi halacha, it works. Al-pi halacha, a kli, within a kli, works. It would only be a question of whether or not the body bag is considered a kli. But al-pi halacha, the body bag is considered a kli, then it absolutely works. That's some of the fun that we have to go with through. Somebody has now... What's that? We're all Tamei Meis. That's a question. It's a very interesting question. Are we not all Tamei Meis anyway? Once we're Tamei Meis, what the answer is, you have to always separate, and you always have to distinguish between what the Isser is and what the consequences are. The Isser is for a Kohen to come in contact with a Meis. The consequences are that when he comes in contact, he becomes Tamei Meis. It doesn't mean he can continue being Tamei Meis. The example, imagine somebody who eats pork. Let's say somebody eats pork, becomes porculated. That doesn't therefore allow him to continue eating pork as much as he wants to. A person eats pork, so you suffer, what do you call this, metantem, asalev, etc. It doesn't allow you to continue eating pork. A kohen comes into contact with a yam, kohen's tamei meis, but he has to still break the contact with the meis as soon as possible. He's not allowed to continue to become tamei meis. Each time he does it, there's an isser and there's a consequence. The consequence may not be there, it doesn't matter, there's still the isser, and therefore kohen's not allowed to come into contact with the meis.
Somebody's tummy can eat something tummy.
At the end of the day, the coin, the Isser is on coming into contact. It's no different than an Isser of Imacholos Asuros, that each time you do it, you're over. You're asking a good question, but that's the answer.
For some, the
airplane still, with the Kli itself going over the cemetery, absorbs. The Kli itself, it doesn't matter. The poskim all held that the airplane was coming, and it did not protect. It's only a Kli within a Kli that protects. Now, there's one other point I want to get to. which very quickly, because this is Nogia, now is in at the end of Kufchav Ches in the Mishnah, also a not well known halacha, is that it says, Asrli shtamish b'koin b'zman hazeh. It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You are not allowed to make use of a kohen nowadays. Asrli shtamish b'koin b'zman hazeh. Now, you have to realize that means that it's not an inyan, it's not a minhag, it's an absolutely codified halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Now, there's a big debate among the poskim exactly what it includes. The extreme opinions are that it includes everything. If you're sitting at a table with a kohen, you can't ask a kohen to pass you salt at the table, according to the most extreme opinion in halacha. There are other opinions that say that anything that is considered basic derech eretz type of behavior, like passing the salt or pouring you a drink at the table, there are poskim would say you are allowed to ask a kohen. However, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that it is good for a kohen to be makbid, certainly periodically, so that people shouldn't think that we don't become too flippant about the halacha. We have to realize that the halacha is a real halacha. I remember I was about 12 years old, and the Rav of the Shul, where I grew up in Chicago, the Rav of the Shul, one morning, I'd never heard of the halacha, and the Rav of the Shul comes over to me, and he gives me a quarter. He says, I know you're a kohen, but do you mind running across the street and buying me a newspaper? I didn't know. I had no idea what he was, what he was talking about. Until later, I learned his mamish a halacha asli shtamish b'koin. Now, if somebody is traveling, this happens all the time. Somebody's traveling. Somebody says, "Do you mind bringing a parcel for somebody, carrying a parcel with you?" To ask a kohen to do that is a problem. To ask a kohen to do something is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch asli shtamish b'koin b'zman hazeh. If the kohen is mochel. Question, because but it's got to be a mechila b'leiv gomor. It's got to be a mechila b'leiv gomor. Not that the kohen is mochel because he feels it's unpleasant to turn you down. Because there, if he's not really mochel, and the kohen is simply doing it because he really has no choice, he doesn't want to be seen as not being a good guy, so then you are over on an isser of being mishtamish b'kohen, because the kohen's got there's an isser of b'kidash, because of b'kidashto, and allowed to make use of a kohen. I actually once asked, I was waiting in line to show, there was a posek, we're waiting in line to show the posek of the lovim and the srogim. And there are two avreichim ahead of me in line, and while we're waiting to show, they wanted to see if their estrogim were mehudar. So I said to them, while you're waiting in line to see if your estrogim are mehudar, maybe you'd like to be mekayim a mitzvah aseh de raisa and let me go ahead of you in line. They didn't like that. So they both gave me a look. It was a very annoyed look because they weren't allowed to let me go ahead in line, but they didn't themselves weren't sure why not. I was joking, kind of. And then I asked the posek if they're mechuyav to let a kohen go ahead in line. He told me. What's that?
Even if
they're talmid chachamim. Even if they're talmid chachamim, but talmid chachamim has to wash the hands of a kohen. I said, it says v'kidash though. Giving up. So I asked the posek. He said to me, they're not mechuyav because to give up your time is like giving up your money. And you're not mechuyav to give a kohen your money. That you're not mechuyav to do. So if a kohen and a Yisrael reach a doorway at the same time, if you reach a doorway at the same time, and that's an insignificant time to let the kohen go first, and it's insignificant, then that would be a kiyum of a kiddush, you let the kohen go first. But they actually, if you're waiting for something, and you allow the kohen to take your place, and it's going to cost you 10 minutes, which is a significant amount of time, that you're not mechuyav to do. Now, number one. Number two, it's a shaila about if a parents are allowed to ask their children who are kohanim, if they're allowed to ask their children to do things for them, is there an issur of ishtamish kohen? The extension of which, by the way, it refers to ketanim. Can you ask a kohen as a kohen, like that rogue who asked me to bring in the newspaper? The poskim, the weight of halacha is you cannot ask a kohen because it's a suffik, it's a machlokas of poskim, it's a suffik deraisa, and therefore, since it's a suffik deraisa, one should be machmer and not even ask a kohen minor to do something for him. Parents of kohanim, little kohanim, are allowed to ask their children to do things for them, and even spouses, the question of a spouse asking, because my wife asked me, when we first got married, my wife asked me to take the garbage. So I said to her, how would it look for me, a Kohen, to take the garbage? So she said, how would it look for you, a Kohen, to be single? So I took the garbage. I asked the same Mosek. he was used to me already. So I asked him, why am I allowed to take the garbage? So he said to me, my wife asked me, he said to me, first of all, he said, it's not her garbage. You know, some of the orange peels and eggshells are yours also. The fact that she has to nudge you till you take it doesn't mean she never made a kinyan out of the garbage. You're not doing it for her. You're doing it because it needs to be done. It's just that she's asking you. So Lamaisa, obviously, Shakagufa, there's not the issue there. But you should know that is what he called. It is a serious, it's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It applies both to adults and to children. And it's mashal, if you want to look it up, it's a couple of the beer halacha. As a shaila over there about a kohen making use of another kohen. Can a kohen ask the kohen to do something? There, the Bir Halacha is nota to be mekel, and even that isn't 100% glot. For a parnosa, a kohen is allowed to basically do anything. A kohen is not allowed to be mochel for a dover bozui. If it is degrading work, a kohen cannot be mochel on his kavod, but for his parnosa, a kohen is allowed to.